I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to minute 100 of season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to sort of finish off the week, because even though today is only Thursday, is Curtis Blows from lots of different things. So Curtis, welcome back to the show.
You know, maybe that's what I should do, is just start pronouncing my name that way so that it looks like it's spelled. That would work. If I just started telling everyone I was Curtis Blows, it'd be like, yes, then I wouldn't have that confusion. And actually, that's a technique I do use sometimes when it's someone that I just need them to know how to spell my name when they see it. You know what I mean?
Oh, you know what? I just realized that I should have said Curtis Blaze. Yesterday you were talking about the fact that how it's how it's pronounced and how it's spelled and stuff like that, and you know, so I just got a little confused. It's Curtis Blaze. I apologize.
Oh, you don't have to do that. You don't have to. That's just fine. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Although I got to say, I feel ripped off by not being able to be here on a Friday.
Yeah, well, but you were here Sunday. You're my first guest this season to be on a Sunday.
That's true. Okay, I'll take that unique little award.
Yeah. Again, I said you're the first. I mean, there will be a few others coming over the next coming weeks, but still, you are the first Sunday guest. So I don't think you should feel shortchanged. You still got 5 episodes. You can't really complain from that perspective. You can if you want, but it won't do you any good.
I have no complaint. It's been delightful.
Okay. Yes, it has. It's been a delightful almost a week, right? That's what you want to say? It's been a delightful 5 episodes.
It has been, yes. It's a wonderful 5 episodes is what you might say.
There you go. Yeah, that works too. So minute 100. Wow. Can't believe that once again, this is the 6th time I've reached the 100 mark, on the show. So minute 100 begins with George looking around cautiously and ends with Clarence defending his wardrobe.
That's right.
So we ended things yesterday with George, you know, looking out at this raging river and trying to figure out what he wants to do. And, you know, we can clearly see here how distraught he looks. And he, like, cautiously looks around. I wonder if he's, like, looked around to make sure that nobody's around to see him do what he's about to do. You know, that he might feel some shame for the thoughts that are going through his mind right now. What do you think?
Okay, well, I think this would be a very complicated time for anybody that was contemplating committing suicide. He's looking around because he doesn't want to be stopped, but also maybe he kind of wants to be stopped. You know, that last thing, looking around to see if there's any possible solution near him or around him that could help save him from what he's about to do and give him an alternative. And he's crazed, very crazed looking, because he wants there to be something. But at the same time, this is his plan. And if he's going to do this, if there's someone there to stop him, he's not going to be able to do it, which would also drive you crazy, because how else are Mary and the kids going to get taken care of if not for his ability to follow through with his plan?
Right. Again, I mean, I give him credit for the fact here I mean, I don't think it's right what he wants to be doing. We're not going to get into a whole debate about suicide and, you know, stuff like that. But I, you know, he's doing this for his family. You know, he wants his family to, you know, have a better life, and he feels that he's the one who's, you know, he's the monkey in the wrench, you know, causing the problems. And if he's not around, you know, they'll get the insurance, and then anyone who wants to blame everything that happened will just blame it on George, and they don't need to worry about the fact because George is not around anymore. I think that's what must be going through the character's mind. So, I mean, he thinks that he's doing something that's very noble, but he's really not.
It's at least very desperate.
Yes, that is true. Desperate is definitely the correct terminology for that. You know, with what he's doing here, for sure. And, you know, he's debating what he's going to do. And then out of nowhere, we hear this like really strange musical sound, and then followed by a huge splashing sound.
This has always thrown me off, okay? I want you to think about the last minute. Clarence, we get a glimpse of Clarence. That's kind of new to you, but for my whole life, I've known that Clarence was there. And Clarence is looking at George, right? Are we both in agreement on that, on the last minute? Okay, yes. So when we see Clarence looking at George, it's as if we're floating, hovering off the edge of the bridge, right? You've got Clarence looking at George. Clarence is looking to his left to see George in that scene, in that last minute, right? Okay. And then in the next minute, Clarence jumps in from the left. Like he would have to be on the other side of George to pull off this.
He's an angel. He could be flying anywhere.
Magic could be the explanation. I think it might be a continuity error.
that's possible also.
You know what? Now that I'll give you that closely, it's almost as if he's coming in from over the top, and I take back everything I just said.
So, in other words, he's higher. He's looking at George, but he's higher up. Is that what you're saying? But then he would have been looking down, not across.
Clarence comes into shot at 6 seconds into this minute, and he comes up and he comes in. See if I can get this exactly right. God, what is it? Are they even dropping a real person? Hold on. Okay, give me a second here. He is okay. What's your opinion? Is he being dropped from above George, like at this point, so that he's far enough out and falls into the right place on the screen?
Is he being dropped?
It's a behind the scenes thing.
It's a stuntman. It's a stuntman jumping.
You think it's just a guy jumping from, because he almost seems to come from over George, like he's already fully falling by the time he comes into screen. He's not.
He is falling. He's coming from above. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. But I think that's a behind the scenes thing. I think
No. If you look at it in slow motion, he's coming from George's right hand side.
Yes, I was wrong about that for sure. But above him, like he came from the right, but they had him jump from above so that he would have some good falling going on by the time he got into screen. Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. That's right. That behind the scenes special effect thing. This is the
It makes sense the way they do it. I mean, there's the dialogue in this entire episode and in this minute is basically only Clarence, and he says help like 10 times. Mm-hmm. He screams a few times, you know, and then we're gonna get that last you know, half a second of dialogue at the end also, which we'll get to eventually. You know, but at this point, I love the fact that George doesn't hesitate.
That's the kind of guy George, you know, is, man.
He quickly just throws off his jacket and then dives in. I mean, that's a Olympic style diving what he's doing there.
Yeah, he's not leaving any splash. Well, he's leaving good diver splash is what I guess what I'm saying.
Good diver splash. Okay. Could
entering
be.
The water smoothly.
Yes. No, but I like the way that they do that. You know, it shows who George is and what he's willing to do.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, and again, it's not as if he jumps in feet first. He dives in head first. Now, I mean, I don't know enough about diving, but is he doing that because it's safer to jump in that way than to jump in feet first?
He's doing that because that's how he's comfortable jumping into water.
He was about to jump into the water on his own volition.
I know.
Okay, but he would not have dove in. He would have just, you know, jumped in feet first.
I know,
but
here's the thing. I've had training on this. We've had to dive from 10 meters up. And the safest way to jump into the water and live through it is to jump in feet first with your arms sort of folded in front of you, you know, so that your arms break the water before your face hits. That's
okay.
The way that you jump in, like off of an aircraft carrier, for instance. I was in the Navy. And if you're abandoning ship,
You jumped off an aircraft carrier?
Jumped off a platform that simulated that.
Oh, okay.
So you jump off. If you're jumping off an aircraft carrier, you have to go in feet first with your arms folded slightly in front of you so that your arms break the water before your face hits the water. And then also if you've got to jump into fire, it kind of splashes the fire away from your face as you're going in. But that's beside the point. The point is, that's the safest way to jump in. You'll break the least amount of bones. You know, your legs will take the impact before you get to your internal organs and your vital organs in your head. Diving is an even safer way to jump in because you're breaking the water with your hands and you're really cutting. Your head is completely protected while you're going in that way. But it takes a lot of skill to dive versus just jumping. Does that make sense?
Okay, but again, if you're jumping from an aircraft carrier, it's going to be a lot higher than what he's jumped from
right.
this bridge.
That's kind of one of the things about this scene. It's like, well, you know, was he planning on committing suicide from 40 feet? Because we, as children, jumped off bridges this high all the time. You know, did he have an alternative plan to sort of drown while he was at it?
Again, we don't know how deep the water
true.
Is, you know, but we know it's rapid, so that could be the biggest hurdle that he needs
sure.
to deal with. You know, that's what I would guess.
So in the time it takes, the what is this guy? It must be one of those bridges that go up and down and he has to lift it. It must be a drawbridge, right? Because there's...
Well, there's a toll booth guy, so there must
okay.
be, yes.
So, and it's a pretty high bridge. It's pretty good. It's a solid 50 feet, let's say. Takes him a few seconds to run out there, and they're still kind of basically under the bridge, so there isn't this huge current. Let me just make sure I've got this right, because Clarence falls in. He's probably 7 feet away from the railing going out from the bridge, right? And then he's depicted going down the river a little bit, and then George jumps in. He jumps in about the same place, say count 7 to 10 feet, whatever. The bridge guy runs out there, shines his flashlight down at him, and they are, let's see, I'd say another 10 to 20 feet downriver. So in the time it takes them a few seconds, so they're moving 20 feet in, let's see, 36 from 10. So they're moving about 20 feet in 10 seconds. It's not a raging river, but it for sure has a current.
Well, it looks much. It looks like it's more dangerous than
maybe
it really is.
The wind and stuff from the blizzard.
It could be, and you know, the fake snow and soap and stuff like that.
I wanted to talk about that, man. It looks like they are in a washing machine. This is the most disgusting, full of soap scene that any of the actors ever are in this entire movie. Like, Clarence, the actor of the plays Clarence, can barely open his eyes from all the soap all over his face. Or foam, I should say. Not necessarily soap. Aqueous fire, you know,
right.
firefighting
That's
stuff
true.
Isn't necessarily soap. It's just foamy. But yeah. This is such a cool scene, though. So we were talking in the last minute about, like, where this water might have come from, right? And,
okay.
You know, looking at this, and that is a lot of bridge to build just to shoot a scene. But they had to back in those days. But when we see the scene of dude standing there with his flashlight, you can see houses and stuff in the background that are lit. And you can see bridge pilings. And you can see the land that the bridge pilings are built on. It's like, this is a pretty serious structure. To do that as a special effect, they could have had a painting, of course, because they've got lots of snow and foam in the foreground to do that. This could just be guys standing on 5 feet of something that looks like bridge. And then the water is only foamy up to that point. And you know, I don't know how this works. I want to hear what your theory is after I'm done saying my theory here. I think what they've done here is take that pool that they had to build, right? And make the water choppy in it. And then have a guy standing on whatever it is up above him, possibly with a spotlight because of how intense that light is. Like, that would be weird coming from a battery-operated flashlight for it to be that bright.
Right.
And 5 feet on either side of him, there's a platform to platform for him to stand on. And then the rest of it could be a painting, a matte painting. And then you have, you're dropping foam and stuff from in the foreground to obscure it all and make it all look real. Okay. That is my theory on how they accomplished in this shot. What do you have a theory?
I do not have a better theory than what you just explained. I'm not even going
to
try.
Otherwise, they would have to go out and put the actors in real danger at night off a bridge. Well, like possibly stunt people.
Yeah, but my assumption is that this is you know, done in a studio and done in a simple and safer environment. Yeah,
because I don't think they filmed on location in those days, did they? Not really. It would be highly
not so much
unusual outside of a Western for them to be on. Outside of a studio, and then even on a ranch.
Well, even a would Western, be on a
ranch, right?
Even Westerns, that's right. It's not as if they go that far.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I mean, I love this. It's one of those things. It's one of those things I encounter as I get older and I start to learn. You know, as I know about special effects and how these things work, where I'm always amazed. These old movies that don't seem to be anything but just almost a play that they filmed end up being special effects spectaculars, extravaganzas.
Well, you have to compare it to what they had at the time, you know.
So I could
give it to them from that perspective.
It's an incredible piece of problem solving in order to get this into the frame of screen, into the screen. And I love it.
Right. It's true. I mean, did you notice that the toll booth guy, he like stumbles out of the toll booth looking around, not really sure what he's heard and what he hasn't heard. And, you know, even though we hear Clarence scream help so many times, you know, he's the original Beatle screaming help.
Well, you know, this guy's in his little office thing. He's got like a fire going or whatever. He's the door's closed. There's a blizzard blowing outside.
We're not there yet. I'm saying even though he came outside, so he heard something. You know, maybe he might have thought it was just the you know, the wind or something like that. But the bottom line is that, you know, he's come outside, and once he's outside, then you would think, okay, it's easier for him to at that point hear screaming of help. Or maybe because of the wind, he wouldn't have heard it either. You know, which is why he goes and starts using the flashlight and stuff like that to try to find the source. Sense. You know, he could also just think that he's being delusional because, you know, it's the middle of the night, Christmas Eve. He's all alone. So he just happens to hear somebody. Maybe he was drinking. That's right. Maybe this is also Mr. Welsh. This is Mr. Welsh's brother. They were drinking together and then he left to go to work at the toll booth, and and they both end up encountering George.
Based on old movies like this, I kind of think all men were basically drunk most of the time, especially at night.
Well, they didn't have the internet.
Yeah, that's the impression I get from watching old movies, is that grown men spent most of their time completely schnookered. Everybody had a secret blast. Everybody drank so much that they were afraid they were seeing things, because they always had to like put their flask away when they thought they'd seen too much. Men in old movies.
Yeah.
So,
and then you wonder why they got a reputation. So basically, at this point, you know, he shines the spotlight, and we eventually see that he's able to use the spotlight to find George and Clarence. The name of the actor who plays this toll booth operator is Tom Fadden. He was born in 1895, passed away in 1980. And he has 158 credits on IMDb. Now, the one thing that jumped out at me of all of his credits is that in 1952, he was a character in the TV show The Adventures of Superman, and he actually played Superman's father, whose name was Eben Kent.
Like, from the planet that blew up, father?
No, okay. No, from Earth, Earth.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Instead of Jonathan, Kent, it was Eben Kent. You know. So I just thought it was very cool that's what he does. And you can see them in the river, and it looks like they have all this soap and foam on them. So you know that it's maybe it's a way to also get clean.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it looks like they're
jump into the river.
So this guy, Tom Fadden, the toll housekeeper. He's got one of those old-fashioned change things on his belt. I love that about him. Like my character would have this change thing, and he's wearing it.
That's right.
The looks that he gave.
But what's great with the shot with the spotlight where he's using a flashlight is we can, at that point, at least get a better impression of how far down it is when you jump from the bridge. I mean, that's a lot further than it looks when George is looking down at the water.
Oh, I've got something technical to say about that, by the way.
Go ahead.
Okay. The scene where George is looking down and he jumps. Now, I'm sure someone has done the math to see how far he actually falls, but it really does seem that he jumped as far and as high as that bridge is, right? Maybe slightly less. Maybe it was slightly a special effect and he only fell 25 feet instead of 50. Because I'm no expert on how long it, on whatever you call it, how long it takes to fall a certain amount of feet, how fast you accelerate and all that stuff. 9.2 meters per second squared, blah, blah, blah.
9.8 meters per second.
He falls for at least a solid 1 second, right? So it's pretty far.
Yeah.
The rail and the water are in focus during that shot, which means they had to really be filming that from way above him. I mean, way above him, in order for the focal, thing to all be in focus, that to be that crisply in focus for the whole depth of field.
Interesting. Never thought about it from that perspective, but I think you're right.
Like, this shot is just a technical feat in every way.
Yeah.
I just love it. Okay, I'm ready to move on. I just wanted to mention that. I was impressed by. I'm very impressed by the whole thing.
No, I'm glad you're telling me that. That's good. I usually don't think that much about the technical aspects of movies. I just unless I can notice there are problems.
Movies by Minute has ruined my ability to watch a movie without figuring out how they did the shot.
Well, he says the thing. I deal more with the story and what's going on, as opposed to trying to figure out how they used movie magic.
Yeah, I
want
to figure out the magic, man.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But that's good. That's also why it's good that, we're both looking at this. We're looking at the movie from different perspectives. So that's good also. To give us a more well-rounded look at, It's a Wonderful Life. And, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. The shot changes, and we see George and Clarence in the toll house with the with the Tone Man, I guess you could say. And we see George is drinking something hot, presumably, you know, tea or coffee, something like that, or maybe even hot chocolate. You know, just trying to get over his cold from having jumped into the water like that.
Yep.
You know, I always find it really interesting that in old movies, you know, I mean, we're going to get to Clarence's line in a second, but in old movies, when you see people that are soaking wet and they're drying off, they're still wearing their underwear. You know, you'd think that their underwear, I mean, we all know from personal experience, if you've ever gotten, you know, your underwear wet because you've been in a pool or someone splashed water on you or something like that, it's not comfortable to stay in your underwear that way.
Yeah, but
in movies, that's what they always do. They always, you have it in Westerns, you know, everything. That I know that they're doing it because they want to keep some sort of moral standard so that you don't see what's really going on with all these people. But
I wonder if I were,
it's just strange. You know, I'm drying myself off, but I'm still wearing wet clothes.
I were,
that's what it basically comes down to.
Other strangers, dude, I think I would keep my underwear on, honestly.
Oh, I agree from that perspective 100%. I'm not that's not something that I'm saying is wrong, but I'm just looking at it and I'm saying, okay, it just looks a little strange that in movies, you know, they're soaking wet on the outside. Their clothes have to dry off, but their underwear is dry. Their undergarments.
Can you imagine how hot that toll house must be? Have you ever been in a room that's been?
That's actually good. It's probably.
Have you ever been
cozy
in a small room like this, a garage or something like that, that's heated with a wood stove?
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's uncomfortable. I mean, it is uncomfortably hot. Like, you got to step outside to get cold again just to deal with it. I've been in many kegs and garages heated by these things, and it is hot. And George is sitting right next to that thing. He's got to be just freezing in order to be able to stand that.
You know, his underwear just got really dry.
Yeah, that's how he's dealing with it. He's still a little bit. He's still got some wetness to him.
That's right. That's right. And then we see this tall guy. We get a close up shot of him, and he's just looking around. He's staring at the two of them, trying to figure out what the hell's going
on. He's
really
fascinated by Clarence.
You know,
Clarence just got him all freaked out.
Yes.
And we find out why the next minute, so I don't want to spoil it.
Well, he's going to get him freaked out next, you know, in the next few days. He's going to get freaked out a little bit more by things that Clarence says and does. A little bit.
The looks on his face anyway are just so fun. And I wish we could reveal it here, but it's just fun to know what's coming, the way this guy is reacting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then Clarence says, because, well, this guy is staring at Clarence. And first of all, you can see that they're like clothes that are strung across on all these ropes and stuff like that. You know, the clothes are drying. And, you know, I love how as this tall guy is watching Clarence get dressed, his eyes like pop out of his head as he's watching it. Then we hear the line from Clarence and looks at him and he goes, I didn't have time to get some sty. And then he gets cut off. So people are going to have to come back tomorrow to hear exactly what it is that he continues by to say. But, I mean, he's watching Clarence get dressed, which in and of itself is a little strange and creepy.
Well, what are you going to do? Don't have the internet.
I guess so. And I mean, I think it's very funny. And the fact that Clarence says, you know, I didn't have time to get some sty. You know, it goes back to the whole debate that we've had since the beginning of this season, where we're talking about that, you know, why are they only contemplating the story of George within the hour before he, you know, his fate will be decided, as opposed to, you know, because he says, I didn't have time. What do you mean, have time? If, you know, supposedly, you know, in heaven or wherever they are, out in the middle of outer space, you know, time stands still. Their concept of time is not the same as our concept of time. and stuff like that. So for, it's just strange. It was strange for me to hear him say that, you know, I didn't have time.
Let's deconstruct that a little bit. Clarence, at the beginning of the movie, Clarence has been summoned by God and Joseph, right? And didn't they?
No, not God and Joseph, by Franklin and Joseph.
Oh, that's not God?
We don't know if it's God.
Okay.
We don't know. It's Franklin. Maybe Franklin is God. I mean, the truth is we figured out that Franklin must be Frank Capra. So in this movie's context, Franklin is God.
God, I never thought of that. Wow, okay. Well, anyway, at the beginning of the movie, Clarence is getting summoned by these two blobs, these stars. Isn't there a line where they say something like, along the lines of, Clarence has been at it for 200 years?
Yes.
Okay, so not having time to change into his stuff in 200 years seems to ring a little false as well, right?
Well, we don't know what he was wearing at the beginning, because in the beginning we saw him as a little dot in the sky.
Okay, that makes sense. He manifested clothes when he came down. The clothes we can't really talk about that. That's tomorrow. But I get it. Okay. I'll be listening with interest to whoever tomorrow's guest is.
I'll give you a hint. It's a good thing it's not on a Sunday, because he usually can't show up on Sundays because he's a little busy.
Oh, interesting.
And I know that you know who it is.
Now I do, yeah.
Yes. <Nice. laughs> Even though he will be with us this coming Sunday. So, you know.
Sweet. That'll be.
I'm able to wrangle him in for one Sunday.
That'll be a fun show.
Yeah. Yes. He specifically requested the next five episodes.
Nice. Yeah, that's going to be good. So, that's going to be good stuff.
Yes. Yes. And that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about for this minute?
I have talked myself out of this minute.
All right. So every Thursday we have a segment called Jimmy Stewart Thursday, where my guests will give their top five Jimmy Stewart performances. So, Curtis, what have you got for us? Start with your number five and work your way up.
Well, there's some things as far as performances go that you have to just talk about all of his movies. I'm going to start there. Jimmy Stewart, kind of in every movie that he's in, there are certain things he does. He always portrays an authenticity and a genuine emotion, right? And it doesn't matter what genre he's in, science fiction, comedy, whatever. He's able to act on all of those. And in every single movie he's in, he's got serious chemistry with his co-stars. It doesn't matter who it is, that you believe that they're together. And Jimmy Stewart has left a really enduring legacy in cinema. Every movie he's in has something special about it that we still to this day remember. There are very few movies that are forgotten that are ones that he acted in. And every single one of his characters also, you really find a balance of drama and humor every single movie. You know, it's he portrays nuanced, multidimensional characters in all of them. So every single movie has that in common when it comes to his performance. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely.
So finding you know, the top five, starting with number five, is so weird. You know, I got to think about this backwards. I didn't think about labeling them that way, but probably I just have to tell them in the way that I've watched them the least, if that makes sense. So, like Philadelphia Story.
Okay.
I know it's blasphemy to say, but I probably only seen it once, and it was probably 30 years ago. His portrayal of whatever it was he was a reporter in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's the movie he won an Oscar for.
Won an Oscar for. So I put it at number five. Awesome. Well,
that doesn't. There is no wrong answer here.
I mean, when you're talking about Jimmy Stewart movies, though, number five is not a bad movie.
Right.
But he was a reporter in that movie, right? So And he kind of he went from kind of being a jerk to kind of a great guy in that way. I don't know. So that's that's why that's in the top five for me. I'm gonna go with Vertigo. It's also one of my lesser seen movies. I know I should have seen it more, but he really had some profound emotional depth in that movie. And, you know, of course, the rooftop chase and all of that stuff, very great movie. I'm putting that at number four. Number three is probably Anatomy of a Murder. We're getting into movies that I've seen more than once now. I love courtroom dramas, and the fact that he makes a courtroom drama that's also funny is, I don't know, something about it. It's a movie I could watch once every 10 years. And now we're getting to the big one. We're getting to one of the big ones. Number two is Rear Window for me. Rear Window, just something about it. It's a special place in my heart. It's a movie that it's how we've always introduced our kids to Alfred Hitchcock movies. It's always like, oh yeah, you got to watch Rear Window. And this is the movie that, so it's always has a special place in my heart because it's the one we share with our kids as they grow up.
So in other words, you want to make sure that they're not voyeurs. Be careful who you look at through the window.
It's just good. It's just such a cool movie, you know, the way it's framed. It's just, for me, it's one of Alfred Hitchcock's best movies, and I want my kids to have a good impression of Alfred Hitchcock. So they don't watch some turkey first and go, what is this garbage? Make sure they see Rear Window. And then, of course, number one, It's a Wonderful Life. My favorite. You know what? I didn't say Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I'm going to have six. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is number two. His character in there, everything about, I just love that movie. Just love it. You know, the big reveal when he discovers that he was put there as a joke, and then how he deals with that and everything. What a moment that is. That whole performance is just amazing. And then number one, It's a Wonderful Life. You know, the sincerity and the depth of George Bailey, you know, going from joy to despair and back again. Ah, heartbreaking, heartbreaking performance. Iconic speeches, everything. And everybody knows who he is immediately. He's iconic in this movie. Jimmy Stewart, man. That's my top six.
All right. That's fine. You did a nice job with that.
it's been a really fun
great
going through this and kind of getting into this Jimmy Stewart frame of mind. There are movies I'm going to watch now.
Yeah.
Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart movies I'm going to probably end up watching over the next couple of weeks just because of this experience. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Cool. I'm glad that I was able to inspire you for that. All right. Excellent. All right. So, Curtis, would you like to say anything else about the movie in general before we close out today's episode?
Not without spoiling. Man, you know, this movie is just watching this movie now with a Movies by Minute eye. Just really makes me appreciate Frank Capra and his ability to do a special effects laden movie. It is crazy to me how much work had to go into this other than just turning a camera on and having good actors act.
Capra is great, especially here.
Yeah.
No question about that. You won't get any arguments from me on that one. All right, great. So Curtis, would you like to tell people once again, one final time this season, how they can find Curtis Blaze. See, I got it right this time.
Good for you, because now I'm going to screw that all up. Okay, so my last name is spelled like blows, but not B-L-O-W-S. It's B-L-O-E-S. Curtis Blows, like that. I should just go around saying my name like that, honestly. I'm at Linktree/Curtis Blaze. And that's where you can find all of the, I think I've got all of the guest spots and podcasts and everything and photos and everything. Be careful. It's a little NSFW, but that's where you can find everything I do.
All right. Great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. So I will be back tomorrow with a brand new guest for another 5 days of talking about this movie. I want to once again thank Curtis Blaze for joining me for the last few days. And until tomorrow, hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.